The Right to Question is supported in part by the Paul Allen Family Foundation, by Humanities Montana, and by listeners like you.
Has anyone ever called you loquacious?
No one has ever called me loquacious. Never. Right. They called me bar whiskey czar ziski. They're always trying to rhyme, not loquacious. Too hard to rhyme loquacious.
Welcome to The Right Question, a program that features authors who write from and about the Western U.S. I'm Sheree Newman, talking with Paul Zarziski about his latest collection of poetry and prose titled Steering with My Knees. So I'll go out on a limb here and say that I think you are a unique writer, and I'll prove it by asking you to read a quote from Steering with My Knees that was included in the book's press release.
I don't remember writing this, but here we go. This book contains 78 pints of poems, one crock jug of prose, a couple vials of jingles, and even an ampule of haiku. My wish for the reader is to imbibe, or better yet, quaff enough of this music juice to experience even a single scintilla of the revelry I felt while bottling this work, much of which had been aging in oak casks for decades, and the remainder dripped warm and green straight from the copper coils. There's only one way to read this work. While knee-steering out into the old cowpoke cosmos's deepest reaches of infinity, of creativity, of the open range of the heart and mind, and crazy bone of the very soul. Yep, we're talking the late, great Raymond Carver's drinking while driving. Any minute now, something will happen. No apologies offered. Take that extra tuck and let the liquid lingo buck. Amen.
And if you read a couple paragraphs from the introduction to Steering with My Knees, I think I'll finish driving my point home.
All swagger and bullshit braggadocio aside, I confess that the ironic fuse igniting this compilation of 40 years of humorous, silly, goofy, poetic focuses was actually lit by too much time jousting with real, non-windmill demons, lit by an urgency to break out of that gloaming. My dad was diagnosed with a terminal disease in late December 2007 and died the following October. I was at my mother's bedside in August of 2010 as she shed her final tear and took her last breath. Since then, too many friends have battled and lost to diseases which I believe we, as a supposed civilized, intelligent species, would have conquered by now had we opted to invest more of our trillions into medical science rather than into military science and the armaments thereof. Speaking of the latter, Liz and I, sitting on the sofa a while back in front of the LG Life's Good TV with dinner plates in our laps, wept into our leftovers as the parents of children lost in the Sandy Hook Elementary massacre discussed with 60 Minutes interviewer Scott Pelley how they were coping. As my dear Italian mother would have proclaimed had she been watching with us, too sad. And what I sensed between the lines of those interviewees' heart-writhing expressions was, we do whatever we can to place one breath, one heartbeat, one footstep, one agonizing memory, one toehold nuance of life's ballet, one slow-motion iota of time after another. Not a single parent alluded to, let alone mentioned, humor or laughter or levity as even the most minuscule tincture to their anodynes. The term funny will likely never again register in their lives as it once did prior to their devastations. Which is all to suggest, ever so humbly, that I have indeed felt fortunate over the past months for the infusion of merriment brought on by the compiling of these poems. They've afforded me a lift from the darker quagmires of my psyche, all thanks and praise to the bombastic, vociferous noise I'm fond of stirring up solely for the fun of it on the page. Fun with words, for me, akin to hours spent on the shrink's divan. For impecunious me, cheap therapy, self-medication. I could never have imagined, while writing one by occasional one these ridiculous testimonials over the past 4 decades, that someday I'd be leaning on them again, this time as a unit, for stability, clinging to them like packing peanut cucaracha life buoys in a monsoon. But here I am doing exactly that, and moreover, inviting you aboard for, as far-reached as it may sound, a poetic, magical realism trip into my life of pie. That's P-I-E. Steering with my knees is, for me, the quintessential Ars Poetica metaphor. My anti-anxiety pill-popping guardian angel, who, incidentally, posed for Edvard Munch's The Scream, knows only too well how many times I have lived this title doing 80 in my beloved 1971 Viper Red Monte Carlo while scribbling words far too hot for memory to handle across the envelope of an overdue bill or into my sweaty left palm. Or, perhaps hairier yet, lived it aboard a 1,200-pound bucking horse kicking 16 dizzying different directions at once. Which is to say, may the covens of sozzled muses hoist their smoldering goblets of dirty martinis in tribute to reckless abandon, especially on the page, the canvas, anything less, offering nowhere near enough the poetic longitude and latitude required for me to cross over and or to tap into creativity's infinities.
Whew.
That's a mouthful.
Yes. You know, whenever I hear you read poems or do a public performance, I always think you must be at home practicing breathing, expanding your lungs or something, because you fill up and just go for it.
And you know, in my latter years here, I've had to fight a little bit more for that breath. I don't know. I think I'm going to have to start doing. I wrote a poem years ago called "Road Work in the Boneyard." I think I'm going to have to start doing a lot more road work, a lot more exercise. I don't know. Am I going to have to enroll in a class of Pilates? Whatever it takes, I'll do it.
Take up running or something. The title of your book comes from a phrase that appears at least 2 times in the book that I'm aware of, steering with my knees. And you write that first in Monte Carlo Express.
I do. I have a 1971 Monte Carlo. I actually purchased it back in the 80s from dear Missoula friends Rick and Carol DeMarinis. Carol is gone now, but it actually belonged to her mother in Anaconda. And I've just fallen in love with that car. We lived out on an old ranch outside of Augusta, and I would drive that old beater into town maybe once or twice a week to pick up the mail. And it occurred to me that the definition of willpower is perhaps the capacity to pick up a week's worth of mail and trying to get all the way back to the ranch without giving in to the temptation to pull your pocket knife out of your pocket and start reading on the way home. And
you're driving.
Of course, no, you would never. You would absolutely never pull over. I mean. The poem is actually dedicated for Rick and Carol DeMarinis, and also to a dear artist friend of mine, to Teddy Bob Roadkill Penmanship Waddell. Tough to read his writing. Monte Carlo Express, Post Office Box 258, 15.3 miles home. I've checked fence doing 80 in a lowrider Chevrolet, springing the barrel pit like a pack mule that hates crossing running water. The torture is too much when a week's worth of mail, stacked beside me like a high school majorette beckoning with her baton, decades back when this car was showroom new, presses against me. I could never wait, and still can't wait to open what's personal. steering with my knees, jackknife gleaming in my lap, the wheel tilted down full, the Monte a roulette ball blur hugging hot asphalt, I shuffle through the stack and gamble once again on 8 miles of two-lane straightaway. I frisbee bills and all business glassined windowed envelopes in which we poets never receive checks over the suicide seat headrest, toss junk mail to the floor mat collage on the shotgun side, stick love letters between my teeth, and maybe I'm better off not having tasted perfume for years. Esquire, slicker than a hot plastic sack of slimy grunion, slithers and slides over, under, and between the seats, leaving its Stetson cologne scent like a Madam's Tomcat mascot marking his turf on 2-for-1 night in a cowboy brothel. Old Monty drifts left across the double yellows on a hill, then right into the shoulder brome, seed heads whipping the wheel wells clean, dust swirling in the side mirror, the day glow rubber fish in place of plastic Jesus dashing for the stuntman grasshoppers, suction to the windshield, their front paws clasped in prayers that must have saved us from the bridge abutment already signed with 4 white crosses for those who did not quite make this curve because of booze, because of snooze, because of tire or tie rod, act of God failure, of car or heart, or the piss poor penmanship of a good friend, loving me almost to cursive death with this letter. Fun with words. I studied with Richard Hugo, as you well know. I pulled into town in September of 73 into Missoula, and spent 2 or 3 glorious years in the workshops with Dick, and he must have said it 1,000 times if he said it once. What poets do is have fun with the music of words, and every time he proclaimed it, I think it sunk deeper and deeper and deeper. And I remember him saying that you reach a point where you don't worry too much about what it is you think you have to say. The poem will take care of that. You just concentrate on the music. And I believe that. It was a hard concept early on, but at 62 and a half years old, I'm convinced he was right.
When you sit down to write a poem, you have an idea and you start putting the words together and then it kind of takes off on its own?
Yeah, more or less. Maybe one of the better metaphors, I rode bareback Bronx, I rode bucking horses on various rodeo circuits for 12 or 15 years, and I really felt a distinct kinship between getting down on a bronc and nodding your head and then the gate man throwing the chute gate open, and you have no idea where that bronc's going to go, what he's going to do, if he's going to suck back, circle, go straight across, swallow his head, come uncork you. And I feel the same way about a poem. It's just to get a line or two on the page is to shake your face for the gate, is to nod for the gate. And again, Dick used to say that poems are like people. If you listen to them long enough and carefully enough, they'll tell you what it is that they have to say. And I love relinquishing that control over to the page, to the poem. I love throwing the reins out over the horse's head and just letting the poem have its say and take me where it needs to go. And I concentrate on making the words jump and kick across the page. And of course, a lot of that comes out of the rewriting process. But you know, it has a lot to do with the 4 F's, fearlessness, freedom, fierceness, and especially fun. And you have to feel pretty free and definitely have to be fearless to turn over all that control to the cowpoke cosmos, to the musical universe, to the page. Gretel Ehrlich, famous writer who lived in Wyoming for a while, wrote in her book, The Solace of Open Spaces, to be tough is to be fragile. To be tender is to be truly fierce. I love that. Fierceness as tenderness. And again, the ultimate, to have fun in the process. I've written some very serious poems in my career, none more serious perhaps than a poem called Shoes, about spending a day at the Holocaust Museum. But as painful and as tormenting as it was to render that poem, on the page, there was still an element of fun and joy in making the words sing.
Finding the words that feel the best is often a big reward in writing.
Right, and I guess I do care about the right word, the definition. Was it Mark Twain who said the difference between the right word and the almost right word is like the difference between the lightning and the lightning bug? I think so.
Right.
But meaning, I think, comes secondary to music for me. And I remember Dick saying in one interview that that oftentimes he just enjoys making a lot of noise in his poems. And yeah, noise. Noise is fun.
This is The Right Question. I'm Cherie Newman. Paul Zarzyski is my guest, and we're talking about his recent collection of poetry and prose. If you missed any part of this program or would like to share it with a friend, you'll find audio online at mtpr.org/twq. It's also on our Facebook page. After a short break, we'll talk more about Paul's books and hear one of his most popular poems, Tumbleweed Munchies. Stay tuned.
Been a fan of music my whole life, and have had the great privilege and prerogative to work on stage with some wonderful singer-songwriters, and they welcomed me into their life by suggesting I might be able to co-write some songs with them, and so I pitched a number of lyrics over the years to Ian Tyson and Tom Russell and Cowboy Celtic from Alberta, and Don Edwards and Wiley Gustafson, and I did a lot of work together, and it's been a bit of a diversion and late in life, and just a great challenge to learn the difference, to learn the nuances of the lyric. And I'd like to recite one for you, and this lyric is set in a pub in Billings, Montana, called Pug Mahone's. This beautiful bartender poured the most impeccable black and tan I have ever seen in my life, sharp, razor sharp between the Guinness over the harp, and I know it should be over the bass, otherwise it's a hoff and hoff, but this was over the harp, and she called it a black and tan, and I just praised her up one side and down the other. She looked like she was tormented by something, and I made her smile, and she gave me this incredible gift in return. She looked at me, and she said, "You know, the Guinness caresses the harp as you sip it." I'm melting. I took a napkin and wrote that down. I said, "Where did you get that? The Guinness caresses the harp as you sip it?" And I plugged my imagination into the 220 and ran with a lyric that Cowboy Celtic recorded and made famous. It's called Black Upon Tan. And I'm going to recite it. No net for those not in the studio. As she poured him a pint in a Tullamore Dew, he looked uninspired, and that's all she knew. He's adrift and he's bitter on riptides of hate, on a sea of cheap whiskey toward Lucifer's gate. At a shake-a-day pub they call Pug Mahone's in Billings, Montana, as he rattled the bones just 4,000 miles southwest of Dublin, A redheaded bartender taught him about loving when she said, "The Guinness caresses the harp as you sip it. Forgiveness, it blesses the heart if you let it." She spoke as she floated the black upon tan. The night is the woman. The day is the man. Her words rolling lovely as dice from the cup. "A winner," she shouted, and he finally looked up across the mahogany bar, her red hair, like the blood of the Irish, half fire, half prayer. When an angel sails in, the devil he runs. Three cheers to the motherland, daughters and sons, the green neon shamrocks, wings taking flight. She taught him how darkness embraces the light when she said, "The Guinness caresses the harp as you sip it. Forgiveness, it blesses the heart if you let it." She spoke as she floated the black upon tan. The night is the woman. The day is the man. Forgiveness, it blesses the heart if you let it.
I would imagine there's one poem, at least, that's a Paul Zarzewski cult favorite. I'd like you to read your poem, The Tumbleweed Munchies.
Living in the country, where we are now especially, we have been under siege, especially during the dry years, by tumbleweeds. And it's not the romantic song, See Them Tumbling Down. Who was that? Can't remember the name. But nothing romantic in my encounters with the tumbleweed. The Tumbleweed Munchies. After my nemesis, the stiff wind howls under cover of darkness, charge to her spiny urchin army of the big dry, I find the scabrous bastards at first light, velcroed by the battalion bunches to every fence line, shelter belt, fissure, niche of my choreful, not cheerful life. They might have me surrounded, alrighty, I think, wringing my hands, laughing my demonic laugh, but I have them cornered. I have their roly-poly, bouncy little backsides flattened up against the wall. With my American Gothic pitchfork held in bayonet stance, I thrust and tear them from their comrades. Stuff the spring-loaded cannon fodder, sons of bitches, into the 55-gallon burn barrel, coughing, choking, belching its thick brown locomotive smoke until, poof! Fee-fi-fo, especially fo-fum, it whooshes, then rumbles with incendiary delight. Romping around the crematorium, I begin to love the last scratchings of their tumbleweed toenails down the inside walls of the drum. I savor more and more each intoxicatingly hot peekaboo into their scanty ashen remains, glowering back up at me from the pulsing red tuba's fumarole, wherein this basso profundo musical disintegration takes place. I can't wait to ramrod the next forkful into the black maw, making my day every couple minutes, cannabis-esque aromas hovering in the dusk as if Beelzebub, his far-out groovy self, had rolled the mother of all doobies in tumbleweed hell, where I find myself suddenly in a dead calm, smelling of hemp, singed bald across both brows and stricken with the inexplicable severe craving for watercress tempura, fondued baby squid, extra, extra crisp, each bite sizzling before my eyes upon the tines. I want you to know where these poems come from, Cherie. This is a very zany book of poems. Very honored to have my last two books published by Bangtail Press out of Bozeman, Montana. Ellen Jones, proprietor, publisher, editor. What a joy, what an honor to work with such a bright young man. This is from our first book together, which I published in 2011. It's titled 51. I was born in 1951. 30 poems, 20 lyrics, one self-interview. From round three of the five-round self-interview. Your approach to the page, I'm talking to myself. Your approach to the page, the process, the germination or conception of the poem. Where do they come from? Hank Williams said, I pick up a pen and God moves it. Keith Richard proclaimed, nobody creates anything. It's there and you just effing grab hold of it. For me, neither of those two simplistic responses even begins to address such a complicated question. I say they don't all come from the heavens, nor are they all just there. Where do they come from? Out of the luminous mind, out of the heart of darkness, out of the gloaming, out of the gloom, out of the wide open, out of the shadows, out of the deep and the shallows, out of the magma, out of the blood, both artery and vein, out of the xylem and phloem, out of the mighty river, the meandering brook, the trickling spring, out of the pearl of anything and everything liquid. Out of the mass of all that is solid, out of the vapors of gas, out of fusion, fission, alchemy, the real and surreal, ether and essence, reasoning and miracle, out of the eye of the hurricane, somewhere over the rainbow, the land of Oz, left field, out of the organic and synthetic, steel, iron, plastic, glass, bone, skin, branch, bark, cell, atom, molecule, proton, neutron, gut, stardust, brain, marrow of the soul, out of the timelessness of all time, out of the noise of all silence, out of the finite of all infinity, and on, and eternally on, but at its very best, always out of and into the glorious commotion of it all, to echo the title of one of my spoken word CDs.
Very well and loquaciously said. Thank you.
You're the first. My name is Paul Leonard, my dad's name, Leonard Zarzyski, but maybe we'll extend it to Paul Leonard Loquacious Zarzyski. Has a nice ring.
P-L-L-Z.
P-L-L-Z.
You sound like a corporation.
Oh, God.
Paul Zarzyski lives near Great Falls, Montana. There's lots more information about him and his books, as well as links to our podcast and Facebook page at mtpr.org/twq. I'm Cherie Newman, wishing you a pile of fascinating books and lots of questions.
The Right Question is produced by Cherie Newman, with help from Barbara Thoreau and Kim Anderson. Michael Marsalek, executive producer. Beth Ann Ostein, studio engineer. Music for this program was written and performed by John Floridis. The Right Question has a Facebook page, a blog, and a podcast. You'll find links to all that at mtpr.org/twq. Thanks for listening and for supporting this program.